Thanks. Look, this is actually for me an important talk and one that makes me a little bit nervous. So I'm going to start on two personal notes. The first is to, I'm glad, Matt, that you raised your father. I know that he would be proud and pleased with the resilience and the success and the principles of Longwoods. And I know that you and the family and the team would be seen just so wonderfully. I miss your dad very much. So thanks for raising him. The second thing I want to do is manage a little bit of expectations. Nothing I'm going to say is new. Not even that line. In 1993, the year I graduated college, or for those of you who are kind of thinking back, that's the year Nelson Mandela won the Nobel Prize. Or for those of you who are much younger than me, that's the year Ariana Grande was born.
Okay.
The Premier's Council on Health came out with a report. And the first line was, this report didn't need to be written. We already knew all of this. So nothing I'm going to say now is new. Nothing is novel. Nothing is the type of cutting-edge research that Walter was talking about earlier on, or that people across this university lead, or that organizations like IFIC and JODEAM are so good at pushing along. This is all old hat. And so in some ways, if you want half an hour to go and do something else, as you've already heard, there's meeting rooms where you can go do that. But let me try to structure this a little bit where we are. I think we're in the middle of a storm right now. Why I think things like integrated care remain one of the best possibilities we have to create the system that we want. A few thoughts about how we get there, which are going to touch as much on the soft side as they are on bits of financing or structure, or those kind of seductive policy questions. And then maybe leave with a few questions that I hope the day will touch on at least a little bit. Because a lot of the questions shouldn't be about what someone else is going to do. A lot of the questions are going to be about what we can do on this. So let me talk about where we are. My colleague, Ross Baker, who's had a career that far outstretches anything I'll ever have in quality and safety and governance, has talked about a perfect storm facing our system. And we can all pick out the elements of this storm that we think are important. There's an aging population. There's a system that was already stressed, now is even more stressed by a pandemic. And there's these persistent problems in access that are not easily resolved just by adding some capacity or adding some money into the system. Now, I think sometimes when we think about a storm, we like to picture one of these big, beautiful clouds on the horizon. I grew up in southwestern Ontario. We were always looking for that tornado. We sort of thought we could see it and we can get out of the way. But the storm's actually here. 2022 is the first year in Canada where people lived less rather than more. And it's a small drop. It's driven largely by men. But if you think that's maybe something we can kind of skip over, you should talk to colleagues of mine already name-checked today, like Laura Rosella, who will tell you that the burden of morbidity that will face our system in 15 years is staggering, with morbididity and complex, multi-morbid chronic disease stretching down into younger age groups and becoming the norm among older Ontarians rather than the exception. Perhaps as important, if you sort of follow the polling data, we've moved over the last couple of decades from a country and from a province that said, things are pretty good. In fact, I really like what's going on in our system. To one now where in the last Léger poll, 70% of people said, I'm really worried that I'm not going to be able to get good medical attention. Where again, that kind of two-thirds or more said, you know what, I think major change is needed. So we are actually in the middle of the storm, and I don't think we should kid ourselves that the storm will pass. We kind of breathed a collective sigh of relief with the end of the pandemic, and understandably. In fact, I'm not really sure it's polite anymore to talk about the pandemic. But there's other things on the horizon, and they're moving quickly. Ukraine feels a long way away. If full conflict emerges in Europe, as many of my colleagues in the armed forces believe it will, imagine a fifth of our health system moving over to the theater. That's what happens with conventional land war. Imagine levels of ICU cases coming back that actually stagger that of COVID. And that's just the thin edge of that wedge. You can think about what's happening with climate change, the impact of wildfires, heat domes. You can wonder about just what a punishing and coordinated cyber attack would do to our health system today. So we like to think that maybe we're through, but we're really going to need to make sure that we're ready to handle what's ahead of us. So we're probably in the middle of a storm and it may stick for a little while. What can we do about it? Well, we're talking about Ontario health teams today, but as it's already been said, we're really talking about integrated care. We're really talking about an idea where hospitals, home care, physicians, other health providers, public health, social care, all these sectors work together, maybe even as far as our educational system, where they can work together on things like population health, patient experience, value for money, equity, a workforce that's excited, enjoyed, finds joy in their work. We're really talking about integrated care, a population health perspective in the quintuple aim. First proof that I'm not talking about anything new here. So let me talk about why we think Ontario health themes will get us there. Well, they do a few things, but I will say that when we look at integrated care, this idea of organizing care around patients and communities, we look at population health, this idea of managing towards population health, we think about how that gets matched, not just with restructuring, not with just some idea about what the organizational chart looks like, but the idea of strong clinical leadership, an integrated view of data, flexible types of funding, and actually perhaps most importantly, some higher degree of trust in our system, you actually start to see some improvements that are at times quite dramatic. There's a very nice little report out of the Milbank Foundation the other day that says, well, looking at a whole bunch of practices, when we've got integrated view of patient care, things get a little bit better. We've got funding that allows us to kind of look at what that, how we might have support that, things get a little bit better. But when those circles overlap, things get a lot better. And those aren't massive changes. They're relatively small changes, but disproportionate improvements in what we want to see. So let me come back to that idea of integrated care, leadership, flexibility, data, and trust. So why is this? What's the magic in integrated care? We've already heard some of it from Jodeem and Walter. Part of it is just the perspective that it brings. Rather than managing the next transaction, you're trying to manage the trajectory of a patient. When you move it towards population health, you're not just trying to manage what people are doing, you're actually trying to manage health, right? You're starting to get at what you really, really want. You know, there's this interesting quote from, I think it was R.G. Evans years ago, one of the great Canadian health economists, that said something like, producing health, purchasing healthcare. And I'm sure I'm getting it wrong, but that idea of actually purchasing and producing what we want to get, we need to bring that together. But the second reason why, and this is maybe more of a finance or an economics perspective, maybe it's more appropriate to do this with us here in Rotman today. Integrated care allows us to break the iron rule of investments and returns on those investments in healthcare. And again, this is John Overbite's idea. It's not my idea. But he did a very thoughtful review for the Health Foundation where he asked the question, does better quality actually save money? And I think we all intuitively want to say yes. And at the end of a really busy day, a lot of us want to say yes, but. Well, Overbite kind of clarifies it. He says, where we make the investments in improvement in health is not where we reap the benefits. And it's the simple example that I always turn to. If your primary care physician, your nurse practitioner, your family doctor actually manages your diabetes a little bit better, that's more work for the physician. That's more work for the practitioner. The payoff is the patient who doesn't show up at the hospital. And the payoff isn't that day. The payoff is a year or two in the future. Think about it from a different perspective, the well-managed patient at home. My aunt, I think largely through two or three glasses of white wine a day in spite, lived at home till she was 101. She's about this tall, very different genetic line in our family. But she had supportive caregivers around her, her sister, her granddaughter, at times her nephew. She had well-organized home care around her. She never saw the inside of a long-term care home. And that's remarkable savings. Even pricing out high-paid family help and actually paying for it, it really is a remarkable savings. So where you make the investment isn't where you get the return. And because of that, we will always underinvest in the improvement unless we bring that together. And I can go through example after example that when you bring it together, you start to spend money where it really matters. So that's why there's a little bit of magic in all this, right? That's why integrated care, that's why a population health perspective is really important. So what do we do about this? Well, continuing on this theme, there's nothing new in what I'm going to say. I'm going to go back to a report written in 2013 by Chris Ham. Now, Professor Sir Chris Ham, Chris has this wonderful ability to kind of examine a situation, spend some time looking at data, spend some time talking to people, and draw out these sorts of conclusions that are quite compelling. And he wrote an early report on movement towards integrated care in the United Kingdom. And it's interesting. He has about 15 or 16 conclusions. I'll go through them with you about what we need to do. They're as relevant today as they were then, but I am going to group them a little bit higher into three buckets that I think are critical. The first bucket is a realistic plan and a report card. The second bucket, flexible structure and financing. And the third bucket, a shared culture and shared expectations. Well, let me talk about what Chris puts into, or you know, puts into all of these things. First, this idea of a realistic plan and a report card. He talks about a very good, clear idea of what, and a pervasive idea of what integrated care can actually achieve. He talks about finding out the groups, whether we're talking about providers or patients or caregivers, who will benefit the most from integrated care. He talks about a coherent and realistic strategy. And we can talk about what realistic means. It means acknowledging that this is going to take time, right? This is not a matter of announcing a restructuring or a new idea. It's the idea of actually getting people to work in new ways. And that, despite the fact that we get to, the wonderful opportunity to work with some of the smartest and most passionate people in healthcare, that's going to take time to change what we do. Requires us to set specific objectives and actually measure progress against them. And it needs us to be realistic about costs. I'll come back to the cost thing, because I think sometimes we believe there's a little bit of magical thinking or hope that if we just do things better, we don't need to spend money. I think those days are long past. What do I mean about the second idea, flexible structure and flexible financing? It talks about shared leadership that includes the voluntary and the social sector. Prior to the pandemic, I had the privilege of working with some of the emerging Ontario health teams. The best ones is where there was a hospital CEO, physician leader, and someone from the social sector tightly and equally leading the table. He talks about pooling resources and teams to increase flexibility. If you have to spend that dollar over here, guess what? You'll never get the benefit of where it's going to be spent the most effectively. Talks about innovation and payment in the private sector. It's an interesting statement as we kind of contemplate how that works in our own system. Maybe we should figure out how we get access to capital, how we get access to different models of delivery. Talks about sharing information about users with appropriate governance over data. I'm sure we've all sat somewhere and someone has said, now, would you tell me again what happened? I've got the referral note, but what really happened and where did you get that test? And maybe I could still send you for another one. It's getting better. It is getting better, but there's still that. And being open to changes in skill mix. Sounds like one of these easy sort of technical terms, right? It talks about being open to changes and who's on the ward, who's on the floor, who's doing the work, who leads, and even our notion of teams. So, realistic plan and report card, flexible structure and financing, shared culture and expectations. What else? What calls on this third one, shared culture and expectations? He talks about common cause and shared sovereignty. That sounds nice. It's actually something that's quite profound if you understand it. Talks about a narrative about why integrated care matters. And this is the thing that makes me most worried about the Ontario health teams. I can't hear that narrative all the time. I don't hear that clarity about what we're supposed to be doing. It requires time and space to develop new ways of working. It requires a bottom-up approach and a top-down approach. My colleague Walter Wojcicki has sort of shown this a number of times as well, and I think it's critical that it's not all coming down. It's not all coming up. It needs to kind of come from both angles to get that type of change. It requires us to support users, to take more power over their own well-being. This is not just about a council or a governance spot for a patient. This is about generally empowering patients and even generally empowering people before they become patients. And it actually requires us to recognize that there is no perfect way here. For years, I was a public servant. I was always worried about doing the wrong thing. I wish someone had said, well, actually, maybe I wasn't as worried as I should have been. But, you know, it should be acknowledgement that we're going to make errors and mistakes in this. And it's actually a shared responsibility when that happens. This is not going to be about finding blame. It's about actually figuring out and moving our way forward. Now, Chris has done some more recent work. About a year ago, a little under a year ago, he looked at what it takes to move towards really being kind of a learning system, as Walter's talked about. And he had some interesting sort of comments again that I'll put under the idea of how do you actually keep the local in all of this, right? So he talks about this idea of working with the grain. It's this great sort of expression. But what he's really saying is there's a grain to the wood. There is a set of resources and capacities in each community. Don't pretend that this is a cookie cutter thing. Don't pretend that they're all the same. Work with what you have, value what you have. And as importantly, share that expertise across the local community, because there are always going to be folks who have strengths in one area and not in another. And so figure out how to share that, which talks about actually sharing some of our most important resources, which is people. And he talks about leaving a lot of room for local goals. I'll come back to this idea of local. Okay, moving on. How do we move towards this? So there's a couple, three options here. I think it's, you know, showing that I've actually worked for a little while as a consultant years ago, that I can come up with three options on everything. Option one, okay, the least satisfying option. Okay, this is the good Canadian habit of muddling along, right? It is hard to get clarity on everything. We are in a strained situation. It's hard to think about new resources. But we could actually figure on ways of building shared ways of working. And that is happening in a number of our OHTs. We could think about keeping the expectations in light of the face of the storm that we have to deal with. You could consider a scorecard, not focused on institutional level measures, but focused on community level measures. You could think about some awards to recognize movement towards those goals. Evaluation will be key and important here, and sharing the results aggressively, right? It's not just enough to produce information. It's not just enough to do a good evaluation. We're all busy. At the end of the day, do you see the extra patient or do you read the report? You see the extra patient. So we need to create ways of making sure that people look at these evaluations, ways that, you know, their good intrinsic incentives and their good intrinsic capacity actually helps move it along. You can create a plan. It'll need to be realistic. You'll need to have milestones on it. You could experiment with small amounts of pooled funding, which might be enough to trigger some of the changes that we want to see as people see that actually they can share resources. Progress will be slow, but we can muddle along as long as we advocate and continued genuine patient caregiver and community engagement. Okay, we'll make some progress. Option two is to fully deploy the tools that we have. You have a tool in the Excellent Care for All Act that says you've got to have a plan for improvement. You've got to pay someone based on that plan. Not because that's the right thing to do, but because actually it just creates a bit of that attention to the plan. You got to report on that. You got to measure things like patient experience. You got to measure things like workforce experience. You can aggressively deploy that. But instead of getting down to the types of measures over which we have control, think about the things that we actually want to change. I don't mean to make this sort of a meditation session, but true control really is an illusion. And it's important we kind of grasp in something as complex as healthcare that we need to work on what we need to change, not what we know we can change. It's a very different set of measures. Okay. Third option. Really go for it. This is probably the most satisfying option. Create a small set of measures. Figure out a way to create an exception so all the ways that we feel we have to pay people now, we can actually pool it. Maybe don't play to everyone on this. Not everyone may be ready for this, but who's really ready to give this a try? And as they did in the United States, create some places where there's not a lot of downside risk. Let people experiment in a way they can get success. We shouldn't kid ourselves that we can do this without including physicians and physician leaders. They are a critical part of it. And almost any time you sit in that maybe 5 or 10 minutes of repose that a physician might have during the day, they want to do things differently. They have no greater focus than the interests of their patients and the communities they serve. You'd really drive stronger patient and community engagement in governance and improvement. Now, three options. Often we used to call this the kind of Goldilocks option. This one's too small. This one's too big. Go in the middle. I'd actually urge us to think about how far we can actually go on this, because the answers aren't going to change. So it's just about how long we're going to give ourselves till we get to that final answer. Okay, what could get in our way? The first is the storm that's facing us. Okay, we've gone through a lot and we're going to face a lot. In some ways, we need to be very generous with our capacity for change right now. It's never been more necessary, but it's also coming on the heels of an incredibly challenging time. It doesn't seem to stop in some ways. People have worked harder than ever before, whether we're talking about people working at a policy desk or whether we're talking about a person working on the front line. There's little that we can do here other than ensure that we have clear and reasonable goals and that we allow reasonable time for improvement without letting go of the importance of that improvement. I'd argue that focusing on a few big dot indicators, like a general measure of patient experience, do you know how to take care of yourself? Do you know what you need to do? Focusing on some big measures of population health, and I'll leave the experts to kind of say what those should be, but just a small handful would be transformative if that's what we actually focused ourselves on. It'd be a great way to get through the storm and not wonder about why we're managing ALC rather than the health of populations. All right. The second is the politics of our system. If we were doing this and I had a glass of wine here, or maybe a third glass of wine rather than a cup of coffee, I might say that most of the debates that we have in our system right now are more about small p politics, more about people who are understandably concerned and at times desperately concerned about the survival and the viability of their organization, and far less about the goals that they'd really want to spend their time on. But it is a tight situation, so you can understand why politics intervene. You can understand why a senior politician will want results quickly. You can understand all these things. We're going to have ways of kind of managing these expectations. Clear plan, shared vision, these sorts of things that Chris talked about. A lot of this soft stuff that seems at the end of the day, we'll get to that later. That's actually going to be critical in navigating through this. The other thing, and you know, my colleagues Noah Ivers and Alan Detsky have written about this, we have a lot of political compromises that we made 40 years ago, 50 years ago, when we set up Medicare. They seem like they're immutable. They're not. In fact, a lot of people have made changes, and we didn't always do it that way either. So there is a need to kind of engage the politics directly as well, not to be our usual polite Canadian selves and maybe not talk about the difficult stuff, but engage these compromises. I think the third thing that might get in our way is this idea that improvement is self-financing. That actually kind of works in a lot of factories. Invest in better equipment, the line will work better. Train your teams, the line might work better. And it'll start working in that factory in that year. At least sometimes it will. We need to get past this idea that we can just kind of try to work harder, right? It's very frustrating for anyone's on the front lines when you hear, well, work harder and work differently. Or just do something extra, would you? We need to get past that bit of magical thinking and actually invest in the type of improvement that we want to see. There's ways to kind of move it on the cheap, or at least cheaper. There's ways to kind of prioritize where we want to spend money. But we have to get beyond the idea that improvement is self-financing. So what's the coda, the kind of final couple words on this that I'll raise? So the logic in integrated care and a population health is hard to resist. I doubt there's going to be someone who's going to stand up. Well, maybe someone will. It's a university, you should. But say, oh, that's a bad idea. But it is a very seductive, appealing sort of idea about how we organize our system. And its heart is a logic of investing where our payoffs are going to be the greatest. But it's going to require us to question some of the practiced and habitual ways that we go after things, the ways that we kind of organize and see the world. So what are the questions that we might actually want to ask? So Chris Hamm talked about flexibility. Okay, where can we pool resources? How much can we push this pooling? Can we create exceptions or carve-outs where we can actually bring together who is getting paid and actually break the link that we have right now between volume and income? What we want to do is create a link between income and outcome. Integrating organizations is not the same thing as integrating care. Simply changing structures, despite how satisfying it is to announce a new structure or to announce a restructuring, will fail to make things better. Now, Ross Baker, who I've already talked about once, looked at me one time and said, oh, it's great that you're interested in policy, but policy doesn't change anything. And I was kind of heartbroken for a minute. I looked up to Ross as a mentor and I thought, okay, well, that's 10 years of my career gone. He said, well, actually, it's people that change things. And so you need to think about how all these come together. It's not just the policy, it's how are people going to change what they're doing. So how can we make time for improvement in a system that's under strain? It's a critical question. The best thing about working in healthcare is that you're working with an incredibly intelligent and highly trained group of people. The other best thing about working in healthcare is that just about everyone wants to see things better. People are motivated by the right things. Anytime you talk to a group of people working in healthcare and you show them their data and they see where they are compared to someone else, they figure out how to get either up to that level or how to widen the gap. Not surprising. They had a competitive process to get it through their training, had a competitive process to get advanced in their career. They're type A in the good way. So we should play to that. So how do we make time for improvement? A third question. Policy has to be about fairness, right? Whether we're talking about the policy on the schoolyard, we're talking about the policy out of Queen's Park, we're talking about the policy in an organization or a large organization like a hospital. Policy has to be about fairness. But I've said we have to be able to go with the grain. We have to be able to understand that local. So how do we actually create something that feels fair, but allows for that local variation? How do we actually communicate about a broader, shared, small set of goals that actually help the system move forward, rather than a one-size-fits-all approach? And I don't think we should point our finger at government in this. We demand the same thing all the time. They're getting that, I'm not getting that. Well, we should get what we need, not what the person one door over is getting. Okay, finally, health policy reform can be frustrating, and perhaps no more frustrating for the folks on the front line of care. Changes in structure and financing mean little when you're trying to get through your day. So how do we actually build the coalitions that find cause and purpose in this sort of movement? Merely saying here's a new policy or a new structure can be as frustrating as not doing anything at all. How do we actually sort of build that sort of, you know, as again, I've talked about already, a shared understanding, a shared narrative, that willingness to have shared sovereignty? How do you build that? That cultural transformation is perhaps the most critical cultural transformation we need. And it is not unwelcome. It is not alien. It is not novel to any of the people who work on our system. In fact, that's mostly what they want. So, but how do we kind of build that time to build the shared culture? So hopefully I've proved I've got nothing new to say. I've name-checked people repeatedly through this, and even when I haven't, I'm sure I could have. So it's not like the answers will change. It's just a question of when we're going to get to those answers. In some ways, though, I could have probably given the same talk about almost any of the major reforms that we want to see in our health system. At times, I think I'm writing a talk about learning health systems, and I realize I'm writing a talk about population health. At times, I think I'm writing about integrated care, but I realize I'm really writing about something else. We're facing a storm, but perhaps most importantly, the people of Ontario want change. It's not a novel idea what that change needs to be. And I know that OHTs have been an idea that's been in flight for a while, and I know that can be frustrating. But I don't think there's another new answer out there. I don't think there's a new road to explore. I don't think there's a simple tweak that's going to change all of this. And I don't think that there's a matter of waiting for the right time. So whatever we get on with, we need to get on with it. And I think it's hard to come to an argument or come to a place where it isn't about getting on with integrated care and population health. And hopefully I haven't exceeded my time too much. Thank you very much.